The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Great to be with you here early in the morning in Edmond, Oklahoma. Late night last night, once again, they had the first ever, I believe, the Imperial Academy Gala, and that was held outside, so we got to see the sunset, and it was a beautiful evening. I understand they had a little bit of wind when they were trying to set everything up for the event, so they were a little worried going in, but boy, by the time the event started at 7:30 or so p.m. last evening. Just a gorgeous, gorgeous evening here in the middle of May, right at the end of the school year for both the college and the academy. Tonight, of course, we have the graduation ceremony for the high school, so that'll be happening, and then we're on into the summer months. We're finally through all of the end of the school year activities, and really without that much disruption, which is incredible when you think about all that's happening in this world. Of course, quite a few of our parents from overseas and from across the border up north were unable to attend the events this past weekend, but because the restrictions are not quite as burdensome here in Oklahoma, it has made for a fairly normal end of the school year for both the college and the academy. Well, we've certainly been talking about the tragedy in nursing homes right across this nation, the United States, and then as I touched on yesterday, it's also a problem in the United Kingdom as well. This effort early on to clear out beds, so much so that you had states like New York and New Jersey sending COVID-19 positive patients into nursing homes. And of course, we knew early on, going back to what happened in Italy, we knew, at least we should have known, that the elderly, particularly those who are suffering from underlying conditions, we knew that they were the most vulnerable. This is from the New York Times the other day, what's behind the nursing home horror. And it says here, we knew it from the beginning. A nursing home in Washington State was the center of the first known coronavirus outbreak in the U.S. It was a nursing home in Washington State. I think they had something like 25 or 30 people die just from that one home. So you talk about a case study. You talk about data, the science of it. We should have known. It says, but we did not act. Personal protective equipment, special training, and extra staff went almost exclusively to our critical care facilities. Nursing homes got virtually nothing. Well, that's not entirely true, it says. In New York and other places, we gave them patients and even nurses infected with the virus. So we didn't give them equipment. We didn't give them special training. We didn't give them what they needed to deal with those who were sick. We sent them sick people. We put sick people into the elderly care facilities. This is from the New York Times, and it says the result has been a raging wildfire of infection and death. A raging wildfire of death in these nursing home facilities. Now, I'm not sure how long this New York Times article is. It's from May 17th, so it's a day or two old. About 700-800 words, and guess which name goes missing in this New York Times piece? It's the New York Times, and there is no mention of Governor Andrew Cuomo. There is no mention of his March 25th directive. There is no mention that directive, which said you take these sick patients into your facilities, you have to. There's no mention that directive was in place for 6 weeks. It was only lifted a week ago. And Governor Cuomo, he still declared it a success. And the New York Times, well, they just give him a total pass. Here's a report from CBS last night, again, about the tragedy in elderly care facilities. Clip one.
We could soon get a clearer picture of the devastating toll the pandemic has had on nursing homes. More than 15,000 nursing homes had to submit their first reports on coronavirus deaths and infections to the federal government by last night. CBS News has confirmed that of the more than 89,000 deaths from the coronavirus, more than 28,000 were connected to nursing homes, nearly a third of the total. As Jonathan Vigliotti reports, a lack of staff could have made the problem worse.
Staff, says CBS. Here again, no mention in that report from CBS. No mention of Andrew Cuomo. No mention of the March 25th order. Let me just read the key paragraph from that order. Once again, it says, no resident shall be denied readmission or admission to the nursing home solely based on a confirmed or suspected diagnosis of COVID-19. No one is going to be denied readmission, even if you have the virus, said Andrew Cuomo. He said it on March 25th. It says nursing homes are prohibited from requiring a hospitalized resident who is determined medically stable to be tested for COVID-19 prior to admission or readmission. And as I've read to you before, there were some nursing home facilities that tested people, including their healthcare workers, twice before they would even let them come in, because the locals had enough sense to know that if we let a sick patient in here, it's going to spread like the wildfire. And it did. And it did. And who's to blame? Who's to blame? If Donald Trump gave that directive on March 25th, do you think the New York Times would mention him in the piece? Do you think CBS would see fit to mention Donald Trump in its report last night? No mention of Andrew Cuomo in either of those reports. You've got to go over to the New York Post to get some of the specifics to see where the blame is placed. It says the earlier outbreaks in Asia and Europe demonstrated that the elderly were easy prey for the virus, doubly so when they have underlying health conditions. Everybody knew that, says the New York Post. Everybody knew that. It says Florida, we talked about the difference between Florida and New York yesterday. He says Florida got the message and implemented a model response despite its vast enclaves of long-term care homes. It reported under 750 deaths in them, a slightly more than one for each of its 615 facilities. Everyone knows a lot of elderly people live in Florida. 615 facilities and just 750 deaths because of what Governor Ron DeSantis put in place. Look, we've got to protect the elderly care centers first. This is how everyone should have responded. It says the striking contrast between Florida on one hand and New York and New Jersey on the other hand can be traced largely to policy decisions by their governors. Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York and Governor Phil Murphy of New Jersey issued almost identical orders in late March requiring nursing homes to accept COVID-19 patients being discharged from hospitals. So we haven't talked as much about Governor Phil Murphy in New Jersey, but he did the same thing Cuomo did. And you look at the corridor, New Jersey, New York City, Massachusetts, all headed up by radical left-wing governors. And then look at the statistics. Look at the epicenter. This is not this is not a worldwide pandemic. You look at the hotspots. It's happened in regions, primarily. Northern Italy. The worst of it, I mean. It certainly is worldwide in the sense that everyone's been affected to some degree. But just like the flu affects every nation to some degree, every season. But where have the real hotspots been? When it started in the United States, as I said at the start, it was that elderly care center in just outside of Seattle. And then you look at what's happened to New York. And then you think about what these governors did. Is the New York Times going to spotlight that? Are they going to name names? Nope. And neither does CBS. It says, despite the surging death count, Governor Cuomo defended his directive for more than 6 weeks. He reversed himself only last Sunday, ruling that patients must test negative before hospitals can send them to nursing homes. Yet he insisted the initial policy worked. Yeah, it worked. We had it in place for 6 months, or rather 6 weeks. We were sending sick patients into these facilities, and everything worked fine. 5,000 people, 5,000 Americans, at least, died in New York nursing homes. New York elderly care centers. 5,000 people. That's well over twice as many that died in all of the state of Florida. And Florida has a higher population than New York. Florida has a lot of big cities as well. Florida's known for all of its nursing home facilities. And as I said yesterday, you'd never know it. You'd never know that Florida handled this the right way. And New York obviously did not. Speaking of these two states, the Wall Street Journal, their editorial team's been putting out some pretty good editorials of late. But in this piece, it just contrasts the two states. And this isn't so much about coronavirus as it is about just bad government on the one hand compared to the way the state has been run, the state of Florida has been run since 2010. And it goes back to 2010 because that's when Andrew Cuomo first came into power as governor of New York. And that was the same time that Rick Scott, the former governor, I think he's now a senator, but you have Rick Scott, then you have DeSantis. These are both Republicans. But just compare these two states. It says in 2010, New York's population of 19.37 million was larger than Florida's 18.8 million. By mid-2019, so after almost 10 years, by mid-2019, Florida had grown to 21.48 million, according to the census, while New York had barely increased to 19.45 million. So Florida, they surpassed New York in population over the past 10 years. It says here, yet Mr. Cuomo received recently signed a budget for fiscal 2021 of $177 billion. That is even bigger than last year's. So New York's population is in decline, but the budget keeps going up. The spending keeps going up. It says it's even bigger than last year's, papering over what was a $6 billion deficit before the coronavirus. It says Florida's budget for fiscal year 2021, not yet signed by new governor Ron DeSantis, is expected to be $93 billion. So Florida has a bigger population, and it has about half the budget as New York. Half the budget. It says Democrats in Albany are claiming to be victims of events that are out of control, but they have increased spending by $43 billion since 2010, about $570,000 for each additional person. It says Florida's budget has increased by $28 billion, while its population has grown 2.7 million, a $10,400 increase per new resident. So just these astronomical figures in New York. And, of course, what the journal's getting at here is that it's not New York's broken budget, that is. It's not the virus that has just leveled the government in Albany. It's not the virus that's sending them into bankruptcy. It's bad government. It's been this way for the past 10 years. Well, even beyond that. But here the spending, not unlike what's happening at the federal level, let's be honest, but the spending's just out of control even as the population is in decline. And so when they come along to take advantage of this crisis, never let a crisis go to waste, it's important that you know this history. When they come begging for money from the federal government, we need money. This is coronavirus. 90,000. Look at what's happening. Look at what's happening even in the nursing homes. It's a tragedy. And there's a lot of nursing home victims in New York. Don't mention Andrew Cuomo. Don't mention the directive. Just say that this is a tragedy. And we've got to have money. We've got to have funding. This editorial goes on. The New York has a top state and local tax rate of 12.7%, while Florida has no income tax. So how do you even wrap your mind around these figures? The budget of $177 billion. The state taxes 12.7%. No wonder New Yorkers are leaving. They're moving to places like Texas and Florida where there's no state tax. Where there's no out-of-control budget. It says New York spending on worker retirement benefits has nearly doubled since 2010 and is six times greater than Florida's. Its debt service payments have also doubled. So they've got all of these unfunded liabilities. They've got all of these promises to pay out all of these generous, generous pensions. They've got all of these people on Medicaid and other government programs. And they've got to be paid for. And then the crisis comes along, and they're the ones, these blue states that have all of these draconian restrictions, the never-ending lockdown. Listen to what the mayor of New York City said yesterday regarding New Yorkers were coming up to Memorial Day. That's generally in the United States, that's seen as the beginning of the summer months. People going outside, people going to the beaches. And this is what the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, said yesterday about people getting out and going into the water. They can go to the beach. The rules, I guess, state that you can walk in the sand. That's healthy. Stay away from each other. Socially distance. And definitely, definitely do not go into the water. Here's Mayor de Blasio yesterday, clip two.
In terms of enforcement, NYPD will be out. Parks Department will be out. Obviously, first and foremost, to help make everyone remember, don't go in the water. You're not supposed to go in the water. It's a dangerous situation to ever go in the water when there's not lifeguards present. So there'll be a constant reminder of that. If anyone tries to get in the water, they'll be taken right out of the water.
Anyone who tries to get into the water, they're going to be taken right out of the water. So all of the little children, the New Yorkers, if you want to venture out into the water, be forewarned. The authorities are going to come and take you right out. There was a piece in The Hill, and again, this is not a conservative publication by any means, but it says here, voters will see. It's just saying Democrats are going to pay the price in November, because it's becoming clearer, isn't it, that the states, the cities like New York, the ones that are basically shutting it down indefinitely, it's leaders like de Blasio and Cuomo and Phil Murphy and the voters. In this author's estimation, the voters are going to make them pay a price. It says voters will see the chaos in cities led by Democrats, particularly New York and Los Angeles, They will see people fleeing from blue states in the north to red states in the south, where businesses are treated like assets instead of criminals. That's what these red state governors are doing. Texas, Florida, they're telling businesses, they're telling Elon Musk at Tesla, look, come to our state. We see you as an asset. And meanwhile, the New York government, the California government, they're just running them off, treating these big businesses in the United States as if they're criminals. It says they'll realize that Democrats, voters that is, they'll realize that Democrats are the party of welfare, high taxes, and more government restrictions on the private economy. And then it just talks about some of the differences between the way these states are handling this this crisis. They're going to see what Democrat leadership is doing to these cities or these blue states. There was a report yesterday about the Democrat Party, still trying to impeach Donald Trump, of all things, over Russia. Russia. Trump-Russia collusion. They want some of the grand jury proceedings that happened during the Mueller probe to be released, or they want information that's redacted to be made known, to be made public, so that they can pursue this again. This is what the Democrat Party told the Supreme Court yesterday. It says the House Judiciary Committee's investigation did not cease with the conclusion of the impeachment trial. If this material reveals new evidence supporting the conclusion that President Trump committed impeachable offenses that are not covered by the articles adopted by the House, the committee will proceed accordingly, including, if necessary, by considering whether to recommend new articles of impeachment. So it never ends. You have to give them credit, at least on this point. They are relentless. They are relentless. They will not stop. Their aim is to destroy this president. And of course, they've been exposed. Attorney General Barr, he got quite a lot of publicity yesterday for statements he made about how that the criminal investigation, John Durham's investigation, that he doesn't see it as something that will go all the way to the top as far as criminal prosecution is concerned against Barack Obama or Vice President Biden. But he certainly made it clear as well that there was a lot of corruption and a clear abuse of power going on back in 2016 and continuing into the first couple of years of the Trump presidency. Here's what the Attorney General said yesterday, clip 3.
And we cannot allow this process to be hijacked by efforts to drum up criminal investigations of either candidate. And I'm committed that this election will be conducted without this kind of interference. Any effort to pursue an investigation of either candidate has to be approved by me.
He's saying, in other words, the interference in 2016 was coming from Democrats, not from Russians. Well, Russians, I guess, to be fair, they meddle in every election that they can. There's pretty compelling evidence that they actually wanted Hillary Clinton to win, but John Brennan would never tell you that. He's saying they're not going to interfere again this time. The Department of Justice, the FBI, the deep state, the administrative state. They should stay out of politics. Let the people speak. Let the people vote. Let the people have their say. And they did in 2016. And Democrats didn't accept it, did they? So they had the insurance policy, as Peter Stroke said. The Attorney General went on to say this, clip 4.
What happened to the president in the 2016 election and throughout the first 2 years of his administration was abhorrent. It was a grave injustice, and it was unprecedented in American history. The law enforcement and intelligence apparatus of this country were involved in advancing a false and utterly baseless Russian collusion narrative against the president. the proper investigative and prosecutive standards of the Department of Justice were abused, in my view, in order to reach a particular result.
And the Democrats want to reopen this. They want to revisit this. They want to go back. They still haven't let it go. It's been thoroughly discredited. Mueller got to the end of his probe. He didn't have anything. So they switched to Ukraine. And now they come out with an announcement yesterday that, well, hey, we might just bring more articles of impeachment. There's a story, by the way, that Richard found about the British Embassy. I assume it's the British Embassy here in the U.S. But how that they wrote, this was during the transition from the election in November 2016 to the inauguration in January of 2017. During that interim, the British Embassy wrote to Michael Flynn. He's the incoming director of national intelligence. He's the one that they targeted. But according to this report, this was at PJ Media, it says that the embassy was warning Mike Flynn that there was no legitimacy to the Steele dossier. The embassy was telling Mike Flynn that, look, he has no credibility, this Christopher Steele fellow. And this is what PJ Media pointed out. This would have set off alarm bells in the Obama White House. Obama was still in power. This letter would have made Flynn aware that Steele, well, the point of this article is that they sent the letter to Flynn. He's in the incoming administration. And they also sent the letter to the Obama people. And he says it would have set off alarm bells. And it would have made Flynn aware that Steele was providing the U.S. government with information for some purpose. He would also have the authority as incoming NSA. That was his title. I got it wrong a moment ago. But it says the incoming NSA to find out what Steele was providing. It appears Flynn's communications with foreign diplomats and governments could have been monitored to find out what he was learning about Christopher Steele and his activities. Remember all the unmasking from last week. It started well before the phone call with Kislyak on December 29th, 2016. So they were looking. They were looking at everything Flynn was doing, and who knows who else. Flynn had gotten these reports, and as I was saying last week, he would have had the power coming in as the head of intelligence, basically. He would have had the power to put an end to the nonsense, to put an end to the hoax, to put an end to this investigation into Donald Trump. It says Flynn was an experienced intelligence official, and the memo must have raised red flags for him. It says by January 6th, 2017, at the Trump Tower briefing, Flynn asked James Comey whether the information in the dossier that had been briefed had been verified. It says the police state panic must have been immense. Well, they panicked. And the target, their number one target, was Mike Flynn for obvious reasons. They had to keep the investigation going so that they could then destroy President Trump. Going back to what the Attorney General, William Barr, said yesterday, this is clip five.
We saw two different standards of justice emerge, one that applied to President Trump and his associates, and the other that applied to everybody else. We can't allow this ever to happen again.
Strong statements yesterday from William Barr, and this is what led up to the statement that got the most press, where he talked about it's most likely not going to target Barack Obama or Vice President Biden in a criminal investigation or prosecution. And he pointed out in his statement yesterday that the Supreme Court has ruled before that even if there is an abuse of power at the top doesn't always mean that it's criminal activity. It's wrong, or as the Attorney General said, it's abhorrent. But is there evidence of criminal wrongdoing? You know, wrongdoing that violates a statute, a law, There's obviously laws that have been broken. We've noted that over and again. I'm just trying to give you the context of what the Attorney General said yesterday. Two sets of standards. He targeted conservative groups in 2012. This was just standard practice for Obama. Use the IRS, use the DOJ, use the FBI, and go right after political opponents. They had no problem doing that. Victor Davis Hanson, by the way, he has a piece about how the left is what it once loathed. And he goes back to the 1960s and 70s and how that you have these prominent Democrats back then that would sound the alarm if there was any kind of spying on American citizens. They would scream in protest. And yet, as Hanson writes, Obama appointees and loyalists surveilled American citizens, doctored or destroyed evidence, monitored their communications. They deceived FISA courts to justify such illegal surveillance, set perjury ambushes to snare perceived political opponents, and used informants to spy on political enemies. The point that he makes is that for all of their screaming back in the early 70s, really what they were mad about was liberals who were spied upon. So they want, as the Attorney General said, they want two standards. Well, it's fine to spy on Carter Page. It's fine to deceive the FISA court if you're going after Donald Trump. It's fine to go after George Papadopoulos or whoever else. Because after all, Donald Trump is evil, and everyone knows that. So we want to use all of the government agencies we have at our disposal. The tables now have turned, and the investigation is looking at the investigators. This is what the Attorney General said yesterday. And then here's the comment that everyone drew attention to, clip six.
Now, as to President Obama and Vice President Biden, whatever their level of involvement, based on the information I have today, I don't expect Mr. Durham's work will lead to a criminal investigation of either man. Our concern over potential criminality is focused on others.
That there are others who are guilty or will be guilty of criminal wrongdoing. We'll see, of course. We don't know for sure on that. But Andy McCarthy makes the point today or yesterday that the way that you hold a president accountable is by voting him out of office. And that effectively happened in 2016 when the people voted out the Obama or the extension of the Obama administration, which would have been Hillary Clinton. McCarthy said, to be clear, if there is proof beyond reasonable doubt that public officials committed statutory crimes, then those officials should be prosecuted. And the Attorney General committed today that in those circumstances, those who broke the law will be held to account. Now, President Trump was asked for his take on what the Attorney General had said. And here's what the president or how he responded yesterday to whether or not Barack Obama or Vice President Biden were part of this plot or this attempted coup, clip seven.
But I have no doubt that they were involved in this hoax, one of the worst things ever to befall this country in terms of political scandal. I have absolutely no doubt that Obama and Biden were involved. And as to whether or not it was criminal, I would think it would be very serious, very, very serious. It was a takedown of a president, regardless of me. It happened to be me. And in my opinion, it was an illegal takedown. I have no doubt that they were involved in it. It's a hoax. It started off with a Russian hoax. It went to a Ukraine hoax. It's just a whole big disgrace. And this country has better things to do. It's a disgrace.
That's President Trump yesterday responding to the statements that the press drew attention to coming from the Attorney General Barr. He said he has no doubt that they were part of this hoax. The last bit of news that I had here, also coming from President Trump, It's remarks that he made. Well, he wrote a letter, actually, to Dr. Tedros and the World Health Organization and talked about the reasoning behind the United States' threat to withdraw funding from the World Health Organization. And I don't have as much time to get into the text of the letter, but here's what the president said yesterday about the U.S. position on the World Health Organization. Clip 8.
And I think they've done a very sad job in the last period of time. And again, the United States pays them $450 million a year. China pays them $38 million a year. And they're a puppet of China. They're China-centric, to put it nicer, but they're a puppet of China.
President, yesterday, he tweeted out the letter. This is the letter sent to Dr. Tedros of the World Health Organization. It is, he said, self-explanatory. And then there it is, out for the whole world to see. Just a couple of excerpts from the letter. It says, the World Health Organization consistently ignored credible reports of the virus spreading in Wuhan in early December 2019 or even earlier, including reports from the Lancet Medical Journal. This is the United. What president in recent memory has confronted the Chinese communist state like this one? It's pretty amazing. It says further on, the World Health Organization has repeatedly made claims about the coronavirus that were either grossly inaccurate or misleading. He says the World Health Organization gratuitously reaffirmed China's now debunked claim that the coronavirus could not be transmitted between humans. And on it goes. It is interesting to just see, again, all the things that he's generally accused of. He has shown, as we've said on this program, he's shown some courage to stand up to these tyrants, to stand up to liars, to stand up to hoaxes, to stand up to the radical left. You've got to at least give him some credit for doing that. When we come back, we'll look at the foundation for this present evil world, as it's called in Galatians 1. And verse 4, you're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
The Trumpet Daily.
There was a report just recently in the Times of London. It's about Boris Johnson's government and their efforts to come out of the lockdown. And according to the Times, it says here, in another meeting with aides early last week, Johnson acknowledged that he and his government had a fight on their hands to take the country with them. And then it quotes the prime minister, "I've learned that it's much easier to take people's freedoms away than to give them back, the prime minister joked to laughter from his team. It was a rare moment of levity. Well, there's quite a few people in the UK and certainly here in the United States who don't find it funny at all, the liberties being taken away. It's so easy to take them away, and we're finding it difficult to give them back. That's really true. He was kind of joking. But as we've said over and again, it's a lot easier to impose a lockdown than to come out of it. This world is caught up in so much human reasoning. Mr. Armstrong talked about the infallibility of reasoning coming from the experts. They are not to be questioned. And yet you look at the Bible's assessment with scriptures like Jeremiah 17:9 and Romans 8:7. And then, of course, Galatians 1 and verse 4, where it says that this world is evil. The whole world is deceived. Revelation 12, we know the verses. The present evil world, it's something we need to be delivered from. Well, Herbert Armstrong used to take us back over and again to the foundation of this present evil world. Where did all of this human reasoning come from? This flat-out rejection of God's revelation, of God's truth. You look at Genesis 2, it says, "And the Eternal commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat of it, for in the day that you eat thereof you shall surely die." And so this is, of course, a brief summary of the account. God had given Adam and Eve the essential knowledge that they needed. He had explained the purpose, his divine purpose for creating man, the purpose for marriage and family and so on, how that these were types of the spiritual reality, God reproducing himself. I'll just hit the high spots here. They got all of this instruction. They had free access to the tree of life, which represented God's Holy Spirit, which represented God's revelation. But they rejected that. Genesis 3 and verse 6, it says, "And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food," that's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, "the tree they were forbidden to eat, God said, thou shalt not," and they disregarded that. "And that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise. And she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also to her husband, and he did eat." That's Genesis 3 and verse 6. So Adam and Eve rejected God's word. They rejected revelation. They observed the fruit. They experimented with it by deciding to consume it, to taste it. They thought that it tasted good. They reasoned that this is pretty good, that this isn't going to hurt us. This is good for us. They decided that the way to know if God was right or wrong was to put it to the test by experiment. To experiment. You look at that word experiment in the dictionary, it says test, trial, experience. To try out a new procedure, idea, or activity. Mr. Armstrong said that they conducted the first scientific experiment, Adam and Eve did. They experimented. Rather than just accepting God's truth, rather than just accepting that if God says it, we have to do it. He's God after all. They wanted to experiment, and then here's the action that God took. Genesis 3, verse 22 says, "And the Eternal God said, behold, the man has become as one of us to know good and evil. And now lest he put forth his hand and take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever. Therefore, the Eternal God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubims and a flaming sword, which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. So God closed off the tree of life. He closed off the Holy Spirit to mankind. He closed off eternal life to mankind in general until Jesus Christ removes Satan from the God, or rather the throne of this earth. Until Jesus Christ removes Satan as the God of this world, deposes him, replaces him, and establishes the kingdom of God on earth. This is the truth of the Bible. This is the true gospel that Jesus preached. But going back to Genesis 2 and Genesis 3, what's important to note here, as Mr. Armstrong taught over and again, is that this was the foundation of the present evil world. This is where the whole course of this present world was set and established. And when God took this action, Genesis 3, 22 through 24, this is like his sentence on man. All right, go ahead and go it alone. But you're going to be cut off from the Holy Spirit of God. You're going to be cut off from God's truth. You're going to be cut off from understanding the truth about God's purpose and plan for man. Mr. Armstrong wrote in The Missing Dimension in Sex, he said that Adam and Eve pioneered in deciding for themselves what is right and what is wrong, what is righteousness and what is sin. And humanity has been doing what seems right in his own eyes ever since. And of course, when you have that, it descends inevitably. It descends into Judges 21:25. Everyone just doing what seems right in their own eyes. And of course, in the midst of this crisis right now, you've got from state to state or region to region or country to country, everybody's doing it a little bit differently. In New York City, de Blasio is saying, if you go out into the water, we're going to pull you out. And then there's other states that are saying, no, we're going to, you know, just open up the beaches. That's fine. That's fine. Lots and lots of human reasoning. Mr. Armstrong continued. How did they do it? Adam and Eve, that is. They, number one, rejected revelation. Number two, used observation. Number three, used experimentation. And number four, used human reason. And he says, that is precisely the scientific method used by modern science today. That's the formula. And they continue to this day. It starts, notice, with the very first point. It starts by rejecting revelation from God. God is not to be included in the experiment. God is not to be included in the discussion. God is to be rejected. The Bible is to be rejected. And replaced with what? This scientific method of experimentation. Discovery, reason. Now we've seen with respect to medicine, I've given you those quotes before from The Plain Truth About Healing, where Mr. Armstrong just talked about how powerful the medical lobby is in Washington, D.C., and how powerful the medical experts are, how that they could effectively even shut down the president of the United States. And he makes the point that this powerful lobby, it's pretty much in bed with government. They think the same way. This is from Lesson 2 of the Correspondence Course. I thought this was interesting. I think I might have read this before, but there's just some comments in there about disease and the spread of disease. I didn't bring the other quotes, but in reading through some of it again yesterday, it's amazing how prescient that lesson is. I think it was last printed 10 years ago. But it's talking about diseases and diseases that spread. And it says how that we're more prone to get it if our immune systems are weaker or if we're sick to begin with. It's exactly what's happening right now. It's exactly what we've been saying on this program. It's right in our own literature. And that's based on the Word of God. That's based upon revelation from God. That's where we start. That's why this program's ahead of the curve. I'm not a scientist. I don't pretend to be one. I guess I like looking at and analyzing statistics from time to time.
basic math, basic math, addition, subtraction, death counts. How many people have died in nursing homes? 5,000 in New York. What happened? What policies led to it?
Seems like even without revelation from God, you can get to some pretty basic answers, compelling answers, if you're just willing to look at the facts, to look at government, to look at the directives, to look at the decrees, to consider cause and effect. This correspondence lesson says, even natural epidemics are poorly understood, and that we can rarely predict how fast they will spread or how many people will be affected. Moreover, in biological warfare, it is likely that the infectious agents will not be those that occur in natural epidemics, but special variants selected or modified in a laboratory. We're just basically seeing the very, very tip of the iceberg here. Coronavirus, when you think about Revelation 6 and Matthew 24, coronavirus is it really is just like an ordinary disease, an ordinary flu. When you think about what's coming, now it's worse than a seasonal flu, but compared to Revelation 6, compared even to some of the numbers worldwide and in the United States from 1918 and 1919, we have not seen anything yet. We see a lot of human reasoning. You see government officials joking it up about suspending liberties. You see a lot of incompetence. You see a lot of cures that are far worse than the disease itself. Hosea 4 and verse 1, it says, hear the word of the Eternal, you children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land because there is no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. There's no truth anymore. There's no revelation. Number one, point one, reject revelation. And then just use observation, experimentation, and a lot of human reasoning. And that's the course that we've been on since the Garden of Eden. God says in verse 6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you, and you shall be no priest to me. We've rejected God's knowledge, God's truth, true revelation, or revelation from God. Mr. Armstrong wrote back in 1964, he says, thoughtful men have said that knowledge is the one solution to our ills. Give us sufficient knowledge, they say, and all problems will be solved. The knowledge acquired by these people has not brought world peace. It's not ended hunger and want. It has not brought health, happiness, and joy. So where's our humility? How about a little bit of humility? You mean you put a directive in place for 6 weeks, 5,000 people in nursing homes die, and then you come out and say, yeah, even when you lift it, because you know in your heart of hearts it's a disaster, and yet you go in front of cameras and say it worked? Yeah, that's pretty common today. Everything worked fine. There's no humility. There's no willingness to admit error, to confess sin, to consider God's knowledge. Well, God cut off from man the tree of life because Adam and Eve rejected revelation from God. They rejected the source of foundational knowledge. They rejected God's government. They rejected the knowledge they rejected is the foundational knowledge taught at God's college. I told the students this in the commencement address the other day. We played that on yesterday's program. Just how unique, how special this college and this academy is compared to all the other institutions of higher learning in the world today. What a blessing. What an honor, what a privilege to be a part of this and to have access to God's truth, to the knowledge of God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can write us at td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.